This is an interview with Ruby Zink, who now lives in Durango, Colorado. Ruby lived as a child in Sunnyvale, Colorado, and she now resides in Durango with her husband, John. The interview will cover some of both areas of southwest Colorado. The date is December 6, 1991. The interview is at Ruby's home, and my name is Julie Bracey.
The school was actually the nucleus of the community.
Okay, so I made an error on, I thought Ruby lived in a town called Sunnyvale, but it was an area and it was Sunnyside Elementary. You went to Sunnyside Elementary?
Yes. In fact, I went there through my first 2 years of high school. Eight elementary grades.
Is that still there?
They have moved the school now. They built a new one up on top of the hill. We were down at the bottom of the hill, and that property is now someone's home.
Oh, the school is?
Uh-huh.
So it's still there?
Yes.
Oh. And then how long did you live there in that area?
Oh, from 1916 till 1938.
Is that when you moved to California?
No, that's when I married. Moved up the valley.
That's when you married John?
Yes.
And you moved up here?
Uh-huh.
And then you both...
Well, we lived up at Hermosa. His oldest brother and sister-in-law had a greenhouse and nursery business, and I was working for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought you said you lived in California.
We moved up to Portland, Oregon.
Oregon.
During the war.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you a little bit about. Do you remember much about that time?
Quite a little.
Then did you move, how long did you live there?
We moved up there in 1941, and we came back here at the end of 1943, so it was a year and a half that we were there.
Did John serve in there?
No, he worked in housing, wartime housing, for aircraft workers.
Huh, in Oregon. Uh-huh. And then you moved back here. Had you already bought this property?
We were in the process of buying it. It was the place that John had grown up on. His father had owned it. His father came here in 1911, and he had owned this property here. And that's where John had grown up. And then... His father decided to put the property into an estate, equal shares to each of the living children. And so we ended up dealing individually with each sibling and buying their interest.
Oh, really? So where is everyone else now? Do they still live here?
One sister and one brother who lived here have died. The brother's wife still lives here up at Hermosa. And then there are two sisters and two brothers live in Idaho and Oregon.
Did you have any trouble getting the property?
Not really. It was a slow process. In the first place, we didn't have money enough to just do a big purchase thing, and so we just dealt with each one as they decided they wanted to convert theirs into money.
You're lucky. Oh, this is beautiful. So the house across the street, was that the house was the house that John's father built?
Yes, uh-huh. And it was two stories and then a full attic above. It was one of the old-fashioned square houses with the little dormer windows in the attic. And it was a pretty neat house.
I bet it was. And then you had a fire?
Uh-huh. In 1960.
And then, were you already building this over here?
No, we didn't build this until in Well, we started it in the fall of 84.
How long did it take?
We moved in just about a year after we started construction.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take to rebuild the other house after the fire?
Not very long. We got a trailer house and lived right there in the yard. And it was wintertime. It was the night after Christmas that we had the fire. And the carpenters, each morning, they and John would sit down with a little piece of plywood or scrap lumber or something and draw out what they were going to do that day. That was our blueprints.
It turned out nice.
It turned out real well. They were real competent builders. And we moved into it Easter. And I don't remember what time of year Easter was that year, but basically the 1st of April.
Yeah.
So
it didn't take long.
It didn't take long to redo it.
Well, and so then, did you already have plans to build over here?
No. No, that came much later. John got interested in solar heating. And he studied, and he read, and he...
Did he go to school, or did
No, just buying books and talking to people who did solar installations and had solar heated.
Oh.
And finally, he got this plan in his head as to how he would like to do a house. So then he decided he was just going to have to build that house and see if it would work. And...
Did it work the way he planned?
Basically, yes. There are a few things he would do differently now if he was building it over again, but not much. And in the summer of 84, we were really all steamed up about starting to build, and I had to have a heart bypass surgery. So we said, well, we better wait and see what happens. But I got along so well and felt so good that that fall we started building. Had the framework and the roof on by winter, and then the carpenters worked inside doing the interior work during the winter.
And where did you find the, I mean, is this like the house over there you said you made from?
The native stone.
Yeah. Is that what you, how you built this?
Uh-huh. There was quite a lot of the native stone just right here on the lot. And John and our two grandsons quarried it, or that is, cut it into this. This is just a veneer on the outside of the house. The blocks are about that thick. Now that house over there, it, the whole wall is rock.
How thick is that wall?
Oh, it's about a foot and a half, I'd say. But this is just a veneer on the outside.
Well, then you did live here most of your life, mm-hmm. because I thought you were in California, or well, it's Oregon,
no.
longer.
No.
Did you see a lot of changes after the war when you came back?
Not so much right away. Farming, there were still lots of functioning farms in the valley at that time. And we farmed on a fairly big scale.
How's the children?
Hi, fine.
I'll check in.
Have him say hello. Okay, so you were talking about farming?
Yes, we... owned this ranch was about 300 acres. Of course, quite a lot lay on the hill, but there was a lot of good farmland in this. And then we bought some land up at Hermosa and farmed it, and we bought the farm and land next door and added to this. So we raised we had quite a lot of sheep, and when we first started farming, we had milk cows.
Did you do all this by yourselves?
With our kids' help. We had five kids. They were good help.
Good to work.
Right. That was the way things were done in those days.
I know, that's the way. I've got three kids who make me work for them. So, now do you still own that farmland?
No. We have sold quite a lot for home sites along the road. And we sold all of the land we owned up at Hermosa. Part of it went into a camper mobile home park down on the river. And
it's not the one towards Durango.
No,
it's the one, it's in Hermosa.
It's, if you know where Hermosa Meadows camper park is.
Uh-huh, I do.
All right, well, we owned that. We sold that. And then the land immediately north of it, part of it was sold, and the buyers plotted a big subdivision, and then that was about the time that there was a glut on the market of subdivisions, so nothing happened with it, and the rest of that land has been in hay and pasture, still is.
Where did you have the sheep?
We kept them here on this place.
And then what did you do with them? How long did you have sheep?
Oh, we must have, let's see, we got rid of the sheep probably in the early 1960s.
Gee, we had a long time.
We had them for a long time, and we didn't have the dairy cows too many years. The market for whole milk was getting real complex by that time. The grade A specifications and all. We had just been selling our whole milk to another fellow who ran a dairy, and that was no longer really feasible. And besides which, we didn't care much about milking cows.
Yeah, so we had to do all that by hand.
So we went into beef cattle instead. And John would buy steers in the fall. We raised lots of corn for ensilage. And he would buy steers and put them in a feedlot and partially fatten them, get them started, and then sell them to larger feedlots. Mm-hmm. So we did that until all of a sudden all of our kids were grown and nobody wanted to run the farm. They had other ideas. And our son Ed wanted to go into business. So we got rid of the livestock and got into the sporting goods business.
When was your first child born?
In December of
1938. Just before the war.
Right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Had two of them before the war. The second girl was born in April of 41. And, of course, Pearl Harbor was in December of 41. Of course, there were lots of rumbling and talking for a year before Pearl Harbor about the unrest over there and how the U.S. ought to just really go over and with a baseball bat and clean house and put an end to it and all that good talk.
Yeah. So did that, and then you were, that's you, so the two of them were born here.
Yes.
Before the war, and then you went to Oregon and then came back here and the other three were born?
We were born here.
Was it? So it was, and that's when you started your farming?
Yes,
and ranching.
When we came back here.
You still had to do a lot of it when the kids were little, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Do a lot of the work. What did you grow? What sort of things did you grow on your farm?
Corn for ensilage and alfalfa for hay. And then large acreages of potatoes. And we built a packing shed. We installed a washer. We'd wash the potatoes and grate them and bag them in 10 and 25 and so forth, and sell them. Well, we sold a lot of the stores locally, the smaller, the 10s and 25s, but we sold lots of potatoes to the Indian trading posts out on the reservation. And John would truck out to, well, sometimes they would come and get them, sometimes he'd deliver them. And he hauled lots of potatoes to Cortez and to Farmington.
Where was the Indian trading post?
Well, there were several traders out from Farmington on the reservation that bought lots of potatoes. Mm.
What do you think you made the best income from?
Potatoes.
Potatoes.
Of course, it was the most labor-intensive, too.
I bet it was.
We, for quite a number of years, we kept a full-time hired man besides the kids' help.
Hmm. That must have been really something. How long did you grow potatoes?
Until 1968. We were selling our last crop of potatoes when we bought the sporting goods business.
What business? I mean, you still own it?
Uh-huh, the Outdoorsman.
Oh, really? I didn't know you owned that.
That and the Handlebar Cycles, a motorcycle shop, and the Mountain Bike Specialist.
I've been in that one. That's the one out towards the mall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went in there once with Amber, took me in there to meet Christy's mom.
Oh, uh-huh.
Okay, well, I was thinking too about what were a lot of the other people doing in this area? Were they farming too?
There were several small dairy herds in the valley. And that basically was what they raised for income. They'd raise feed for the cows, and their income was basically dairy.
Did that, when you said you were talking about the dairy changing, you know, and they were doing all that, did a lot of people stop having dairy cows?
Some of them had to. Some of them put a little more investment into it and built facilities that met the specifications and kept enough cows that it was worthwhile to run that sort of an operation.
Hmm. Did is there anybody still doing that?
Not here in the valley. I don't believe there is a single farm that provides the livelihood for the family left here in the valley.
Gee.
There are people that raise a little hay or rent out pasture, but it's a supplemental income.
It seems to be, a lot of horses.
Mm-hmm.
People are more into that sort of thing now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
After the war, isn't that when the smelter closed, the Durango smelter?
Well, it was processing vanadium ore at that time. The gold and silver operation had closed down, and I can't tell you the date, but it was quite a lot before the war. And then they put in, changed what was left of the smelter to mill and process the vanadium ore.
Do you remember much of that when you were little?
I remember we had neighbors who worked in the mines in Silverton, and I remember one time we had been in Durango for something at night, which was very unusual in my childhood. But on our way home, they were dumping red-hot slag from the smelter. It was running down the side of the slag pile, and it was kind of a spectacular sight.
Gee, you don't remember what you came to town for?
I think it was a performance of what they called the Chautauqua, which was a traveling troupe of entertainers.
Hmm. What was the downtown like in Durango, do you remember, compared to now?
It was, of course, somewhat smaller. And my earliest recollections, we drove a team and wagon into town.
I was going to ask you that too.
And at that time, Graydon's was a department store. They had a grocery, and we did an awful lot of our shopping there. There was a blacksmith shop that the horses had to go to once in a while for shoes. And down where Schluter Floral is now, there was a big vacant lot, and what would now be a trucking company was a transfer business, big teams of horses and freight wagons that they would pick up the freight that came in on the train and deliver it to the various merchants.
Where was your mother born?
Over close to Salida.
Is that Kansas?
No, that's Colorado.
Oh, Colorado. Is that the border? Isn't that close to?
No, Salida is about.
I guess there's a Salida, Kansas.
Salina. Salida's kind of in the middle of the state, in the edge of the mountains.
Okay, I've never been there. But that's where she was born. And why did she move out this way?
Well, her dad was a dentist, and he evidently had a rambling streak in him. He moved his family from one area to another. It was always within Colorado, but she lived a variety of places. And she was living in Ouray, running a little semi-greenhouse that was heated by one of the hot springs. And my dad was working for a dry goods store in Ouray.
What were their names?
Myra and Malcolm Nelson. That is Myra Eggleston and Malcolm Nelson.
And they met there?
They met there and were married there. And then she was real anxious to get out into the country and have a farm, and thought that was the place to raise kids. So he was over in this area in the fall of 1911 looking for a place to buy when the huge floods hit. He couldn't even get home, couldn't get word to her for a week or so. But anyway, they bought 80 acres out at Sunnyside. That's what the place I grew up on.
Where were you? You were born?
In that house out there.
Oh, gosh. And then, now how long did your parents live there?
My dad died in 38. He had cancer. And he died shortly after we were married. And then my mother lived there on the ranch for a year or two, and we finally persuaded her to sell it. And she lived with us off and on for several years, but she was badly afflicted with arthritis. And finally was in a wheelchair and was in nursing homes. At that time, people had, someone would take care of three or four older people in their home, and she was in that sort of a situation.
They just didn't have nursing homes?
Nothing like Four Corners Nursing Home. Mm-hmm.
Seems a lot nicer way to treat people. So how old was she when she passed away?
She was about 74 or 5.
Do you remember where they came from when they were younger? You know, where your mom and dad were from?
Well, my dad was born in Sweden.
Really?
And the whole clan from there, and they weren't a very large family. He had some cousins, but no brothers and sisters. But they all immigrated up. They were in the area close to Longmont. And his parents had to find work. His dad was a carpenter, and his mother operated a hotel for a while to get money enough to buy some farmland up there. And his grandparents lived on the farm, and he lived with the grandparents.
Do you remember what they grew?
I don't know what they grew there.
Did they talk much about growing up?
Not a great deal. It wasn't apparently a really happy time for him. He only went through the third grade in school. He had a difficult time because he was not bilingual and was funny and different, I'm sure. But as he was growing up, he became a self-educated person. He read constantly and really had a wide scope of information.
Sounds really interesting, Kristen. Well, let's see, back to the Durango area, because I'm just kind of curious myself what it was like. Do you remember the orchards?
A little, yes. I remember really more of, they used to raise an acre or two of raspberries and strawberries and hire young people from the area to pick the berries during season. And my sister worked up here two or three summers picking berries. And that really, I remember that more clearly because we would pick her up on Friday and then bring her back up on Sunday afternoon, and I usually got to come along, and I thought it was so beautiful up here. I still think so.
I do too. I bet it was just beautiful though, with all the strawberries. And then where did you sell those?
They sold them a lot of them to the stores locally, and there was still quite a little mining activity in Silverton, and they shipped a lot of produce to Silverton.
Do you remember much about Silverton?
No, I didn't get that far away from home very
often. Well, yes. It would have been a long... When did you get your first automobile?
I believe it was in 1927.
Was that kind of exciting?
Oh, it certainly was.
I bet it was. What kind of car?
It was a Dodge truck. And my dad had it for a long time. I don't remember when, but he did finally buy a brand new Dodge pickup. And I do remember it cost less than $1,000 at that time.
Yeah, trucks were probably the thing to have, so you could take all your work with them. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to take a break from that.
Okay.
We'll just sit here and talk.
My sister attended Fort Lewis while it was still out at Hesperus. And she went there for 2 years, I believe. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And it wasn't... Oh, it was a few years after that that the push to move it into Durango came. And I'm sure it never would have grown and prospered as well out from town that way as it has.
Where was it at in Hesperus?
there is still an agricultural experiment station where the college was. It's about 2 miles south of the Hesperus store that's on Highway 160.
That little grocery store? Uh-huh. And so then they moved it up here where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember them building it?
Mm-hmm. And of course it was like all the other big things that the community gets involved in. There were pros and cons.
Mm-hmm, I bet. Did it take a long time to get it approved?
It really did, yes. And each step, as they have enlarged it and changed from a 2-year to a 4-year and got the degree granting privileges. And it,
do you think the population grew after the college?
Oh, it must have some. However, it, as I recall, probably it kind of filled the gap that developed after the oil and gas people left in the early 50s, because the town really grew for a while. Riverview and Crestview were just open land before that.